This is CliffCentral.com.
Ah, it's Danny Koppel. My favorite. Danny Koppel. Then he can SMS Kram. With his friend Kabilu. Oh, thank you, Danny Koppel. I'm joking. This is the Gareth Cliff Show. I'm Sia.
Oh,
I'm horrible for that. I know. But
that was just mean. Just mean.
Well, you just can't get away from it. You see, some people are like caricatures of themselves, and I find Danny K to be like that. He's an absolute sweetheart of a guy, but he's exactly what you think he's going to be. This is the Gareth Cliff Show. It's Sia, Ben, and Leanne in. Gareth is on holiday right now. He'll be back on the show on Wednesday. And so just before we get into the news, there's a few messages to get to, because clearly some of our topics are still, you know, garnering a lot of opinions here. So just before we get into that, and if you want to message us, you can also do so, 079-748-2090. Someone has messaged a little earlier. We were still discussing this topic of couples who share things.
Yeah.
And this person who didn't leave their name says, woke up one morning and walked out to my flatmate using my toothbrush.
That is revolting.
No, it mustn't happen ever.
He thought the entire time that one was his. Oh my word. Later that year, I would go to the shower and see his toothbrush lying on the shower floor.
The shower floor is a really terrible place. I even battled to put my feet there.
You even battled to say it. That's how grossed out you are.
Yes.
And the next day, I would see him use it normally.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, we always joke about, it's like a holiday joke whenever we're with family, because all of a sudden you're sharing a bathroom with a family member.
Ugh.
And we always say, I took a dump in the shower and used the toothbrush to push your toothbrush to push it down. I mean, that's a going joke. And then this happens. I can't actually believe it.
Yeah, that makes it so awkward, because I don't know what you're meant to say.
Okay, well,
to your roommate at that point.
Think about what you would do in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's this video going around where a woman is seen in a Walmart, going to the food section, opening up the freezer, taking out a tub of ice cream. You know, those round tubs.
Oh, no, don't.
She opens up the lid and she licks the ice cream.
Why?
There's obviously a guy filming her, and he's egging her on. He's going, lick it, lick it.
No.
She licks it, puts the lid back on, and puts it back into the freezer. And there's laughter, etc. There has been an enormous police search for this woman. They have tracked them down, the two of them, on, you know, using the video that was pulled from the footage. Footage that was pulled from the incident.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened somewhere in the city of Lufkin in eastern Texas. And police launched the search through a whole lot of areas in that vicinity. The company, because the ice cream was Bluebell ice cream, and it was the tin roof flavor. All of the tin roof flavored Bluebell ice creams have been pulled from all of the shelves.
The company decided to pull all of them.
I think Walmart was in on that too.
And that specific chain, or that specific store, or the entire chain?
The entire area.
That's a little extreme.
Yeah.
I feel like that's money gone down the drain.
So they've identified her. They know who she is, and they're literally waiting for just verifying her identity. It's like just a technical glitch that they need to get through before they can issue an arrest warrant for her.
Mm.
She could face 20 years in prison.
Good.
On what count?
Or
what charge?
Being a revolting human being.
It's a second degree felony charge of tampering with a consumer product.
Oh.
The charge comes with a 2 to 20 year prison term and up to $10,000 in fines, according to the Texas State Penal Code. Investigators are also in discussions with the FDA, and additional federal charges could be made.
You know what? Go for it. if they charge her and she ends up going to prison for 20 years, well, I'm sorry, you reap what you sow. It's just part of, it's part and parcel. And you can't think that you can do something like this and not, you know, face the repercussions. Is 20 years a bit extreme? Perhaps. But I get it on paper for what it is. I remember seeing once a video of someone as well who was being filmed doing this. So it was probably they just wanted to seem cool on social media. But this person walked into a fast food store with a rat and let the rat loose in the store just to scare all of the other people in there. And was a whole hub and bub, and there was this debate of whether or not that, that person should be charged and is, you know, being criminally charged. And it's just a bit extreme. I say, well, you reap what you sow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if you'd seen this video, let's say it was at a spa in your area, and someone had licked a particular tub of ice cream and put it away, would you buy that ice cream and eat it happily?
No.
Actually, okay, yeah. For the reputation, I understand why they've taken all of them back.
But I think by taking them all of them back just shows you what a severe act of dickery this is. And this woman should face the full wrath of the law.
That's what
she obviously, and I mean, no one does. We didn't know. We didn't know the repercussions. but still, it's so stupid of her to do.
It's obviously terrible behavior, though. Like, it's just a stupid thing to do. And this is what it was come down to, is that why must people start acting stupid because they got cameras on them?
Well, because
being a prick, just do something meaningful in society. Stop licking people's ice cream.
You want to film it. You want to see if it will get shares on your social media. That's what's probably driving her.
Parents have failed you, but get on with life. Stop being a fucking moron.
Huh. So Wendell, on that point, has an interesting message to send. Wendell actually sent two different messages, similar points here, saying, what's the difference in using my towel after I've dried my clean balls to actually rubbing your face on my balls or maybe licking them? People do kinky shit all the time. Get over it.
Yeah, and also I think balls get a really bad rep. They just do.
Please defend balls, Ben.
I'll defend balls. I will. Balls, sure, they're sweat. Sure, they've got a really unsightly kind of... Yeah, I mean, like, they don't look great. You know, often see people, like, you know, sharing pictures of their balls. It's not like, you know, you have cleavage in your underwear, which you throw... Balls aren't great. They're a bit hairy. But still, they're not the ugliest, most unhygienic part of your body. Generally, people can wash their balls very easily. Unlike feet, which are harder to wash. It's not like, oh, well, you...
I think, buttholes are a whole lot more... Buttholes are
different because buttholes are not really a body part. It's a functioning
orifice.
It's a functioning waste distributor. Okay, it's a different kettle of fish. But like, I reckon people have cleaner balls than they have feet. They have cleaner balls than they do ears. Balls are easy to clean. I generally put a bit of towel into my balls because they're cleanable.
You know what? Thanks, balls are cleaner than vaginas, I think. Vaginas are supposed to be self-cleaning.
Vaginas are just
more
glamorous.
So I don't mean clean. I mean free of
viruses.
No, well, just don't ask extra Steve,
because
stuff.
Steve's he's very anti-vaginas.
Anti-vag.
And then Wendell also says, second part of his message says, I'm honestly struggling to understand how sharing a towel is worse than a swingers party. Looking at you, Leanne, you can't be going, ew, come on.
No, but you see, when you're swinging, you're usually drunk.
So
you don't care. I mean, if I took a shower drunk, the last thing I would think about is whether I'd use the towel on my butt or not.
Oh, got some explaining to do. On the homeless topic we had just earlier on, Elena says, a lot of homeless shelters in South Africa are breeding grounds for severe lice and other infestations, as well as violent and unsanitary as well. So everyone needs to suspend judgment and stop speculating.
Yeah.
And then think of it that way.
Yeah, would you rather find a clean spot somewhere outside a corporate building or go and lie on a dog blanket that's covered in lice?
While someone maybe tries to, you know, stare at you.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Challenges him.
It is tough.
I didn't think about that. And then someone else messaged us, 0797482090, saying, rather just pelt her with ice cream by the ice cream workers. This is to the lady who
licked the ice cream.
Also, fair idea. I'm also a big believer in this. Go more sort of primeval with your punishments.
And more literal.
Yeah, and more literal. And more public shaming as well. Public shaming is so underrated. I think it'll get stuff done.
Yeah, you know
that. Teach people lessons.
Again, see a sense of community. Get everyone together on a Saturday. Let's help them with things.
I mean, you get people who commit suicide over being publicly shamed. Well, they just can't take it, especially now with social media.
Oh, right.
And speaking of that, I don't know if you remember the video of that human rights lawyer on a flight who lost her shit.
No, I don't remember.
And she was shouting at the air crew. Actually, it came up, weirdly enough, on one of my YouTube feeds just recently. Her name's Simone Burns, blonde-haired woman. She is a human rights lawyer in the UK. She was actually jailed after she was shouting racist abuse at Air India staff. Mm-hmm. She has now been found dead days after being released from prison.
Sure.
So she's 50 years old. She was given the 6-month jail sentence for shouting at the staff. She was on a flight from Mumbai to London last year. She had been refused more alcohol and demanded to speak to the pilot. So in the actual film, you see her.
He won't have alcohol.
No.
Exactly. Worst person to talk to.
Exactly. So she, in the film, you see her screaming at this crew member. So to quote her directly, she said, I'm a fucking international lawyer. And she was calling the stewards Indian money grabbing cunts. She reportedly also tried to smoke a cigarette in the toilet.
Oh, wow.
But was she in business?
No.
She was probably mouthing off an economy, which makes it worse.
Yeah, she was. Anyway, she's been found dead at Beachy Head in East Sussex, where she lives. After her release from Bronzefield Prison, her world apparently fell apart after this conviction, which you can imagine, because she was targeted by internet trolls after this whole footage thing went viral. And during her trial, she actually admitted that she had no recollection of the incident.
Or was that a cop-out?
She admitted being drunk and on the aircraft, and she admitted to, assault.
Was she on those pills?
I don't know. Sometimes I can't remember what I've done.
But there's been a few cases in the last couple of years that people, when they try to take a certain sleeping tablet and then they mix it with booze, they don't know what's happened. I mean, I'm not
obviously, I'm 100% sure that happens.
I'm not obviously supporting this woman at all.
No.
Because that's just dreadful behavior, which obviously she has within her, because let's be honest, we awaken the beast in ourselves. We show a lot of our true selves. But yeah, there's been a few cases of people, they get the alcohol medication mixed wrong. They don't remember being on the flight. They don't remember how they got home, how they got anywhere.
I don't know. Yeah. To me, it sounds a bit like a cop-out in some instances.
How does she die anyway?
Well, this is the death. They don't say anything about it. They try and go into like a bit of history. In 2001, she was diagnosed with skin cancer and she underwent several operations. Like you see photographs of her with a plaster on her nose or whatever. So I don't know if they're trying to presume that that's what it was. But the death is not being treated as suspicious. So the matter's been passed on to the East Sussex Coroner's Office. So I suppose we'll find out more. But then underneath it, it's got a suicide helpline. So I'm presuming that the assumption is that she committed suicide because of all this online trolling. Yikes. So public shaming can be one thing, but it can actually...
Sounds like a big deterrent to me then.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great deterrent for acting like a prick.
I was going to say, I don't think that changes Ben's perspective on
this. What would you take if you were offered 20 years in jail for licking an ice cream or public shaming to the point that you actually don't feel like you can live anymore?
But what sort of public shaming? Just like verbal?
Online trolling, people throwing shit at your house.
No, don't throw shit at
me. No, I'd take public shaming because people eventually they give up. 20 years is a long time to be in prison.
Yeah, hey.
But it's
if they don't hurt me.
I mean, look, I don't mean to be to make light of this. I know suicide is a very difficult subject for various reasons, but whatever deters people from doing crime should be thought about and worked on. So if public shaming is it, Well, I'm sorry, but the punishment's punishment at the end of the day. You shouldn't have a choice of what your punishment is. You should, there shouldn't be levels of like, oh, that punishment seems a bit harsh. Okay, well then don't do the crime or don't be the person who's in the wrong. There's also that. I mean,
I can seriously imagine myself having been a student at varsity and opening up an ice cream and licking it because it's funny and not knowing the repercussions. I don't think people in that case know what they are.
You never do that.
No, I might not. But,
I don't easily get that in this day and age.
I don't think we should be so forgiving of people who are just either ignorant or stupid. And right. Like, you've got to apply yourself to, there are however many billion people in this world, right? It's not just you. So you've got to, like, going back to your conformist ways, that's considerate. Like, you've got to understand that this world is so much more than just you. So stop acting like a prick. It's not hard.
I get it. I just think maybe people should know more, be more educated about what the repercussions are. Maybe that in itself would be a deterrent. Maybe people would drive better if they knew that they could have their license taken away from them.
Exactly.
No, I don't think it's because people don't know.
But
you do know, we all know that if you kill someone, you're in cuck.
But with every right comes a responsibility. Perhaps maybe the punishment might be a little too much. You know, for licking an ice cream, you're now doing 20 years in prison. Maybe it should be that they have to work in the ice cream factory for 3 months without pay.
And without a jacket.
You see,
underwear.
Who's in one now?
I'm still for that sort of punishment. I still stand by the fact that Bill Cosby should have not gone to prison and rather just take away all of his luxuries and have to live in like a commune with, you know.
No,
with lice-infested blankets.
I think Bill should have been in a glass box in a big city with just all his images of like his accusers. Get rough with him. People can then throw stuff at him. They can like verbalize how they feel about him. We need to connect with these crimes.
I worry about the people who listen to us sometimes. Someone messaged us saying,
oh no.
I feel bad for laughing. They say, do you want job creation for the homeless? Well, that's a pelting crew on the Cape Town parade and they get a free ice cream. So it's a bit of a tourist pull. Bring us your baddies who film themselves eating and stealing ice cream and the homeless can basically pelt them with ice cream.
Yes, that's smart. Again, sense of community is coming to the fore here.
Killing two birds with one stone.
We're planting seeds
that's,
here.
And that's sustainable as well. Huh? And again, it's great deterrent from crime.
Someone says, morning, bet you the homeless in Pretoria would gladly go to one of these shelters at this present time because of Sia the Killer.
Oh, right. That serial homeless person killer.
Okay, but just not, don't put my name into this.
Well, you always talk about it.
I'm just saying. And then Dr. Robin says, Leanne, stop. Mouths are the most unclean places. Vaginas, pretty awesome. Clean machines. Balls, well, those depend on the owners.
Yeah, it is mouths.
Be a good ball owner. I think that's my final thought there.
But I'll tell you what. If I was desperate for ice cream and I knew that one of the tubs I was choosing from had been licked or one of the tubs had someone had put their balls on it, I would rather take the one that had been licked, wouldn't you?
Well, don't ask me.
Yeah, see,
I don't know why I'm asking all the tough questions.
It is a tough question because you can get good balls.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that one.
You can get good balls, but a lick's a lick and it's awful.
Balls and blueberry, my favorite.
But how great is like a celebrity endorsed product? You can get like Tin Roof with Tom Cruise's ball imprint.
Guarantee people would buy that.
People would buy that.
My word.
Guarantee people would buy they that. Would. If Barack Obama dipped his nuts in some rocky road. I reckon people would buy that.
How are
I'm
we
thinking
such
of
a
like
classy show?
Pam Anderson's nipple imprints.
If Pam Anderson dropped one of her breasts, this is on some strawberry or vanilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Straight away.
Yep.
How come it's absolutely fine for nipples?
Well, nipples are lovely.
Yeah, nipples are cute.
Nipples are... I mean, they're great. But guys, seriously, you know, like the whole Hollywood walkway and people have their handprints and stuff like that.
Yeah.
America, there's a massive market for celebrity imprints on ice cream.
If I was a 90s star, I would totally do that. You know, if I'm not really getting a lot of work nowadays, just to get some extra revenue because autographs aren't really a big thing anymore.
Think about this practically. So how sore are your nipples going to get being dipped into thousands of tubs of ice cream?
But that's the thing. It'll all be like, it'd be very limited edition. That's what make the demand. I mean, Pam Anderson would probably have maybe 5 tubs that go out a year.
Oh, maybe she can dip them in while it's, before it's cold.
No, it's got to sit. It's got to be like cold.
Semi-cold.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's the liquid and that you won't get the actual foundation of the imprint.
Ben, you've thought this through. Have you just write it down for our business plan, right?
Yeah. I
always believe there's people making, I mean, people steal our ideas all the time for content, but I think people take our ideas for million-dollar enterprises.
I think there's proper legs to this.
Personally, I haven't got enough disposable income to go for this novelty kind of stuff, but I think Pam Anderson's breast print imprint in a tub of ice cream would be an absolute seller. Or going back to the luxury life, right? She'll be at a restaurant and you can order that dessert for one night only. People would pay hundreds of, or $1,000 for that.
Yeah, think about how much people spend on sports merchandise or like concerts. Can you imagine
sitting at a table and out comes herself presenting your dessert with her breast imprint?
She's sitting at the table with whipped cream on her boobs and a cherry.
Well, okay, look, this is a bit more money now, but that would be the Instagram moment of Instagram moments. People are eating these gold covered steaks in America, right? You pay however much, and it's like this steak is made in gold. I reckon you get a celebrity in there. Or even, I mean, if you're looking a little bit further, you know, you drop someone's dong on that.
Oh, no.
Carl says, we must distinguish between the balls and the penis. Balls are closed. I scrub mine. The penis is a different story. That's open, and some days it doesn't smell great.
Oh, no.
Same as the vagina. That shit's open. The balls must be treated fairly.
No, I think as guys, you can really get to work in them and keep them clean.
Oh, gosh.
Unless you have one of those, like, really tiny penises, and then your balls and your penis are just one amalgamation of icky.
Do you want me to make a horrible segue? Well, the balls could be called the hot zone. See what I did there?
I did see, but it was weak. I mean,
thank you. I'm tried. It really doesn't work at all. Let's talk about the hot zone here. This is a very, very cool new series. Okay, so the hot zone, let me give you a bit of like a series behind the scenes idea of what's going on here. Back in 1989, in a scientific facility outside Washington, D.C., the deadly Ebola virus made its first known appearance on U.S. soil. And so the finding and eventual containment of the lethal virus, which had a fatality rate of up to 90% at the time, this is crazy, was thanks to a group of courageous scientists and soldiers. And so now National Geographic has decided to take that and turn it into a 6-part limited series called The Hot Zone. And this is all inspired by true life events. And so we have two of the actors in the series, Bohang and Sive, who are joining us in studio right now. Good morning. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Yeah.
I was just actually making the comparison a little earlier. Right now, HBO has Chernobyl and everyone's talking about that and how it's been able to re-energize a story that, you know, happened many years ago and people get to learn about it for the, you know, new way. And now here we go with the hot zone. So just elaborate a bit more on it, Sive. What's the series about in your perspective?
So basically the series is, oh, good morning.
Hi.
The series,
what does your jersey say?
Visions.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, I love that you pointed that out. Thank you very much.
You've got the vision, girl.
So the Hot Zone is basically a series, a 6-part.
Yes.
About how Ebola got to America. So basically it starts out back in Kenya, where you first see myself in Bohang. We're basically the first people that sort of bring the story together, or just, you know, introduce the audiences to the story of how Ebola started.
And Bohang, like, I think we all know about Ebola just from the news and what has happened, and we see these death tolls, and it's really scary.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, did you know about the history and how it all started before the series?
I did not know. In doing my research, I found out, and I read a bit of the book that the actual series is based on, and the book, that first chapter, the way it describes the symptoms that the guy had is terrifying. And Yeah, no, I didn't know much about the disease and how contagious it actually is.
Yeah.
Until I did the research and I realized that it's terrible.
Isn't it sort of a process where it liquefies
your internal organs. Yes. And it can be caught from any body fluid in just touching wherever someone else touched. It's highly contagious. So. Yeah, that's why in those days it spread so rapidly because people were firstly unaware of it and you know how contagious it is. So yeah.
I like that the story is being told as a limited series. I think, you know, nowadays we're all like, don't give me 13 episodes to binge. Tell me the story. Let's get into it. So what part of the Ebola story does the series, encapsulate or go over?
I think, honestly speaking, they just jump right into it. I think from episode 2, because they introduce the virus in episode 1, and then they test it and, you know, try and prove that it is Ebola. In fact, I think by episode 2 already, the stakes are quite high.
Yeah, and what do we get to see as a rollout of the series? What else gets covered there?
We get to see how you can be infected with it, what it can do to you, how bad it can get, how rapidly it spreads and all of that. I think it's quite informative, actually.
Yeah, and I think also pretty much how, just to add on to what Sibe said, what I think the main story is how the U.S., has to now deal with this, you know, terrifying disease that they don't know. They didn't know about it. They don't know how. I mean, they knew about it, but they knew that it just exists in Africa. It's never been on American shores. Mm. So now it's threatening the people of America. So now it's becoming like a, you know, obviously a huge priority. So it just shows how those characters deal with trying to contain that without letting the public panic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Also mainly because animals could only contract Ebola.
Yeah.
But now suddenly, now it's moved on to human beings. So now, I think it's important to point that out.
So what characters do you guys play in the series?
I play the role of Dr. Musoke, who,
Dr. Taman.
You know. So, yeah, he was the first doctor on the scene as, the patient was rolled in, into Nairobi Hospital. And at the time, no one knew what it was. So when he assessed the patient, he didn't use any gloves, no face mask.
Oh, no.
And yeah. And so,
why did you do that? That's so silly.
Right. Doctor. So, I think for him, it was more like, look, this patient's just been rolled in. He's dying pretty much. So let's try and save him while figuring out what's going on.
Mm.
And through the course of that, he got infected as well. So what they do is they in the series they showed as well, they use his blood to test and figure out what this thing is and to help them figure out the disease and everything.
Yeah.
So, and this is all, by the way, telling the story from 1989. That's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That really isn't a long time ago when you think about it.
Yeah. But it is in terms of technology and what was available then.
Then, right. Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I'm sure playing these roles, you guys realized.
Right,
Jeez, we're so hashtag blessed these days with everything that we've got.
Exactly. Yep. Even the hospital that we got to shoot in was a really, they found a great location because it was a rural hospital in deep in KZN that didn't have the technology that a modern hospital would have or has these days. And so it played along with what was sort of available in those days, you know, where everything was sort of like basic and sort of dilapidated. Like they didn't have the money to have all the latest technology. So it was great.
Yeah. And Sive, what about your role?
I played a nurse that was working alongside Dr. Musoke. So, basically I'm there. I roll in the patient in the beginning and we work together basically to sort of try and figure out what's going on with the patient. Mm. So,
this might be a bit of a stretch, but since this is only 30 years ago and it's National Geographic, very factual, and you want to get the facts straight, did you know of anyone on the production side who has contacts with anyone who was actually there in 1989 or was somehow involved in the story and could tell like first-hand encounters of what happened? Of course, a lot of them are victims who unfortunately passed away, but anyone who had first-hand experience of having to deal with this outbreak.
But no. In the writing process, it would have been that would have been.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. We didn't have access to any of the writers. But what I did, what I tried to find Dr. Masoke, or like I was trying to find this guy just to see how he looks, how he talks, how he, you know what yeah. I mean? I was trying to find him and I couldn't find any pictures and I think I found his son on Instagram mm-hmm. and I followed, but he had a private account and he didn't follow back, so I couldn't find his pictures.
Oh,
so I was just like, okay, so never mind.
That's awkward.
So without there being a spoiler, obviously he doesn't succumb to the disease.
No. He actually survived. He's still alive
today.
I'm not sure right now if he's alive, but he did survive because they found out that he has a disease called Marburg. And he was
actually, is that like Ebola light?
Yeah. It's like exactly kind of yeah, exactly. It's similar symptoms, but it's like Ebola light to describe it. You know, so he was actually saved by another doctor in that hospital because he first tried to diagnose himself, and then he saw that he was not getting any better. So another doctor was like, "No, listen, you have something serious, so let's treat it." So he was treated.
Gee, so it's like, what a mystery to unravel right in the beginning.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With him having this, the chances of him having this Marburg virus or disease was so minimal.
Yeah.
It just seems so crazy to me. So the series premiered back in May in the United States. And I love this statement by someone from the Walt Disney Company about the series. They said, "The Hot Zone has become National Geographic's best ever scripted series for the United States." So congratulations to you guys. And then said, "We cannot wait to broadcast this much awaited drama series in Africa, especially seeing the show was partially shot in Durban and features local talent like Warren Masemola amongst the two of you in studio this morning." Isn't that cool?
When do we get to see it?
Yeah, it's already premiered this week on National Geographic, which is DStv channel 181. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you're indoors tonight as well, the repeat is on every Friday at 8:45 p.m.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I just know this off the top of my head.
Wow.
I love it.
Wow.
It's a wealth of information.
I thought I was going to have to be plugging it in, but I see you got this. So.
Ask me anything, I know everything else. So did you have much interaction with the international staff? Because also one of the lead actresses in this is the Emmy Award winner, Juliana Margulies.
Mm. Not really. I mean, when we got to set, I remember the first day we had to, like, the whole day we were doing, like, wardrobe fittings and makeup tests. And Liam Cunningham was there and James was there as well. And they were shooting nearby where the base camp was.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally didn't want to be that guy. But like, hey.
Yeah.
Selfie, like, I didn't want to be that guy. I was just like, I saw him there, like, doing his makeup, you know, because we all had the trailers lined up.
Yeah.
And their trailers were, like, right, you know, like, there by us as well, and the directors and everyone. I just didn't want to be, like, hey, can I get a picture? Like, I was like, okay, cool. I'll just chill here. It's fine.
And I've always wanted to know, you know, the world is getting smaller more and more now. You know, we're so connected in every way. Does being in an international production help you as an actor get more international work?
Well, I'd hope so.
That's what I'm hoping for,
getting to work with an international production altogether, I think it kind of, I mean, it adds on to your resume.
Mm.
It makes your resume look better. So hopefully it does open more doors. I mean, and it's sort of some kind of way of networking. So hopefully, it will help.
Yeah. Cause I mean, on set as well, I think that my highlight of working on this thing was, being able to work with international directors and producers and having them give us, you know, great feedback when we're done. And I think that it's great when your work speaks for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think when that's the case, people can remember you from your work. And, so hopefully that carries through into, and manifests into, you know, real opportunities and doors opening, internationally as well.
Yeah, and I also assume it also makes the conversations a little easier when National Geographic is internationally recognized as opposed to some of our local channels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like she said as well, you know, to have that on your resume to say you've worked on a production that's co-produced by Ridley Scott. I mean, Ridley Scott is huge.
Wow.
Yeah. And Linda as well is also huge. And to say you've worked with this director, I think that helped. I think in conversation it helps to say, oh, okay. Well, you know, now we can talk. You know, now we
understand the caliber.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it does make a difference.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Thank you.
I think this is really, really cool.
I absolutely love myself a good drama and a good series and something that's based on something that really happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And add in the medical and I'm sold.
It's all fun and games up until the first opening scenes, and then you see the strip based on real life events. That's when you know.
Yeah. Oh. It's like you put your popcorn down and start listening.
It's now, like I said, it's going to get real. Yeah. Well, congratulations and thank you so much for stopping by. The stars of The Hot Zone on National Geographic on DSTV channel 181. It premiered this week in South Africa, the 3rd of July at 9 p.m. So you can catch it every week at that time or repeats on Fridays at 8:45 p.m. as well. Thank you so much, Bohang and Siva.
This is Cliff's Central.com.
Well, that is very cool. The stars of The Hot Zone stopping by this morning. Definitely going to make the efforts and catch up on that. And also just to remind you as well, one of our newer podcasts here on CliffCentral.com, one thing that is always on the mind of every entrepreneur is how they are going to get their capital. How do you manage debt? And how important is it to be financially literate? Right? These are all very important aspects and questions to ask yourself as you start up a business. Well, Keith Van Zyl, co-founder of Knife Capital, and Dov Gurnan, who's the CEO of Merchant Capital, talk about the exciting environment that entrepreneurs find themselves in. And in conversation with Fred Rode, they delve into the different aspects that funders of initial capital and funders for growth would look at to invest in a business. So get their top tips to guide your thinking around funding and gather some pearls of wisdom on how to make sure your business stands out in a crowd of attractive investments. So get the podcasts of The Healthy Business Show now on cliffcentral.com or actually wherever you listen. The Healthy Business Show is brought to you by Discovery Business Insurance. Very, very cool. Nice one to listen to as well. It seems that our junk discussion still has people going.
Oh, no.
I don't know whether this is a good thing or not. Someone on WhatsApp just sent us a text saying there's a company that imprints people's assholes to chocolates. Yeah. You gotta have a willing partner though.
No.
Yeah, but like you can make these molds. So what you do is in the porn industry as well, you can get like imprints of porn stars' vaginas and penises and stuff. But that to me is a little impersonal because you do one.
And then it's a mold.
You do one cast and there's a mold. Mm. What we're saying is that you're going to get personalized dipping of privates from celebrities and ice cream.
Yes.
That's where the
specifically Pam Anderson's.
I mean, this is Dragon's Den. I think I've got to take this to the top.
Well, it's never been done before. So, I mean, we can't even estimate what our income's going to be.
Yeah.
Off
I mean,
of this.
We've got to stop throwing away these billion-dollar ideas.
Really? We have to like trademark 20, them.
20 minutes ago is a $1 million idea. It's just gone to billions.
Well, someone else says nobody's going to bring you a 2-liter tub for dessert in a restaurant. So how are you going to fit Pam Anderson's tits into dessert?
Tits, say put your tits.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
No, you just get a, then it comes with a bowl you can take home and then like she's signed the bowl or whatever.
Yeah, these are all semantics. We can get through this. Yeah.
Mm. Well, semantics around tits, eh?
You know, let's not get preoccupied with these things. I wonder what George Meany's take on something like this. Good morning, George. He is in Bloemfontein, right?
I am. How's it, Sia? How's it been?
Hey, must be frick out there.
It is, almost said the wrong word, goat.
Yeah.
We get what you mean, though. Are you on motoring business there?
No, actually, I've got a family member who's gotten ill. So, you know, it was touch and go. It was quite serious. So, I had to come down here very quickly.
Sorry to hear that.
That's okay. As a matter of fact, it was my dad. But he's out of danger now. So, you know, he's in his mid-70s and, you know, problems befall you when you're in your 70s, I suppose.
Yeah. All right. Well, putting all of that aside, and what has the motoring world had in store for us this past week?
I'm sure you watched the video, or if you didn't, I'll tell you, but some jackass on the weekend clocked 322 kilometers an hour in a Nissan GT-R past Oliver Tambo racing a motorbike.
But also there was a car.
Yeah.
The guy was just wearing a t-shirt on the bike, so you knew it was East Rand from the start.
Exactly. Well, he was coming from that direction anyway, so he was deep in the East Rand.
And there's no way of catching these guys.
Well, I don't know if there isn't any way of catching these guys. And, if the Metro Police Department is listening and they haven't thought about this yet, they were going past the airport. Surely there are surveillance cameras around that airport. I watched the video very carefully, and I actually took a screenshot of them passing under the toll gate gantry.
Of course, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those gantries surely have cameras on them. And then past the casino. Casino has surveillance equipment usually. So,
if we had an FBI, they'd be all over this.
Yeah, exactly. So the police department has commented and said, these guys will be prosecuted to the nth degree if they get caught. I actually hope they do get caught.
Yeah,
it's not acceptable to put other people's lives in danger like that. Exactly. Go find a frickin' racetrack.
Yeah, no, it's really crazy, and it actually has left quite an imprint on me. And when I'm driving now, I imagine somebody coming up behind us at that speed.
Ugh. Yeah. The speed doesn't necessarily kill. It's the speed differential that kills.
Yes.
I'm sure the campaign Speed Kills, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not necessarily speed itself. It's one person going 200 and the other one going 80 that kills you.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
so or a barrier or a wall that that's going naught, and you're doing 200.
Or so, a car that's going super slowly in a 120 zone.
Yes. So controlling speed is an important thing, and I hope these guys get caught, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't think it will be that hard to catch them. It's just about who will be following up on this, and this is something of grave importance. So I hope, we do follow up on a story like this.
Yeah.
I'd love to follow it if the police department is doing something about it and actually trying to catch these guys, because they need to be caught. And and I'm pretty sure if they're sitting at home or somewhere, they must be shivering in their boots. You can't tell me that someone has done that and is not afraid.
Mm. Well, they must have been the ones who put it out.
Well, nobody knows at the moment, but, surely the guy in the passenger seat must have shared it with somebody or shared it on a WhatsApp group and guys, wrong group.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think there's more chance of Akila and Balula getting a selfie with the guys than them being, first.
Yeah.
Brought a book. You gotta think priorities when the Minister of Transport's involved.
Former Minister of Sports and Good Times. Mm. Now be on the road to success. Let's see what happens there.
So I hope they get caught. And then the National Automobile Association of South Africa has asked the Reserve Bank to lower interest rates, because we have seen yet another month of decline in new car sales. Now, used car sales are more buoyant at the moment than new car sales. And South Africa is a country where there is very little public transport and infrastructure. So we need cars. And so people don't stop driving cars. They just switch what they drive. They go to cheaper cars, more affordable cars, secondhand cars. So one part of the economy is buoyant when another part of the economy suffers when it comes to the automobile industry. But the National Automobile Association has asked the Reserve Bank to lower interest rates to help consumers buy cars. The WesBank has come back and said, well, even if we lower interest rates, it's not going to be of much effect, because the relief will be very little.
Oh. Mm.
I mean, you can imagine interest rates being lowered by 1%. Is it going to really make that much difference?
Exactly.
Because I feel like South Africa, so most of South Africans are in debt anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, so is 1% going to make a difference? Is 2% going to make a difference? I don't think it's going to make a hell of a difference, to be honest.
Mm.
It'll help, but it won't make a massive difference.
Yeah, true.
And then in Wisconsin, the Supreme Court has ruled that you consent to a blood test merely by driving on a public road.
Whoa. This is going to change the game.
Yeah.
So whether that comes to South Africa or not, I don't know. But a court has ruled that a drunk person, it was in a court case between a drunk person called Mitchell versus Wisconsin, and he was caught drunk, and while blowing in the breathalyzer test, he passed out. So the cops ordered a blood test.
Oh, Mitchell!
Oh dear, Mitchell!
The whole Mitchell stuffed it up. But I don't think it's a bad thing, because especially if the law is read with if under the suspicion of driving under the influence of alcohol. So if that's the case, I'm fine with it. But it might come here if a cop wants you to have a blood test, they're going to be able to do it.
Mm.
Just in terms of technicalities, George, do you know about breathalyzers? I don't think we have much consent around that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think breathalyzers are a whole other controversial issue when it comes to accuracy anyway. But it's being used and it's being admitted in courts, and people are getting huge amounts of, you know, huge fines as a result.
Yeah. I mean,
in South Africa, if you're over a certain amount, you have to go for a blood test. They drag you to a clinic or whatever. And you go and do a blood test.
I only ask that, it seems quite silly, but you know, breathalyzers would be the only way to establish whether someone is drunk or not. And then that can lead to the second step of this blood test, which you have no consent after. You can't exactly be putting needles into people's arms just on the assumption that they might be drunk.
Well, I mean, in this case of Mitchell, he passed out, so there was no way to get a breathalyzer.
Oh, dear.
Mitchell, what a dodo.
I mean, if he had breathed out or taken a big sigh while he was driving, he would have passed out behind the wheel.
More than likely.
Jeez. Thank goodness he was pulled over.
Exactly. So, I've got no problem with drunk driving laws. Doesn't matter how strict they are, as long as people's rights aren't abused if they're not drinking and driving.
Mm.
You know, I suppose that's the caveat.
Yeah, institute a law for greater safety. I'm for that.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the creator of the Ford Mustang, Lee LeCocca, has died at the age of 94.
LeCocca?
LeCocca, yes, Leanne. Yeah, I thought you would like that one.
I was just checking.
LeCocca, LACOCCA.
LeCocca.
And Lee LeCocca was born Lido Anthony LeCocca in Pennsylvania in October 15th, 1924.
So he changed his first name, but not his last.
That is correct.
He's a genius.
He changed his first name because when he took phone calls, people would get confused with the name Lido. So he changed his name. He worked for Ford, became its president, and then Henry Ford Jr. fired him in 1978. And in his autobiography, LeCocca says of his time as a president of Ford that when I finally got to the top of the world, fate said to me, wait, we're not finished with you. Now you're going to find out what it feels like to be kicked off Mount Everest. But he has now since passed away. And LeCocca is famed for bringing Ford, or General Motors for that matter, back from the brink of bankruptcy. So I think an icon has died. In the same time that electric cars are starting to come to the market. So funny that the ICE vehicle that he created in that Ford Mustang is now coming to an end, and he's passed away.
Sure. Well, rest in peace. Lekaka.
Rest in peace.
Leah just wanted another excuse to say his name, George. Don't mind her.
I don't think Leanne's going to forget old Lee Lekaka.
No, forever imprinted.
And then just to follow on from the electric car story and the Ford Mustang, a company by the name of Charge Automotive. Now, Charge Automotive isn't a fly-by-night startup. They're a London-based automotive company, and they usually deal with high-performance luxury vehicles. And they have worked with the Williams Formula One racing team, the McLaren Automotive, and Jaguar Land Rover. Those are all their clients. So just to give them credibility in that this is not it's not going to be a short-lived thing, they have vowed to keep classic cars alive by electrifying them.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Good.
Some innovation of sorts there.
Exactly. And that's it.
Awesome.
Very good.
Well, George, thank you so much for that update. What do you have planned for the weekend? Are you going to be staying in Bloemfontein? Will you be doing some flying?
No, so my dad is thankfully out of danger, so I'll be going back to Johannesburg today, and then I'll be taking on the weekend as usual. I'm not going to do any flying this weekend. I'm probably going to spend some time with my daughter on Saturday morning, and do some stuff around the house.
Well, thanks, George. Have an awesome weekend, and we'll chat to you next week.
Cheers. Thanks, yeah.
That's George Meany with our Auto Central Power Pod, a weekly look right here on the Gareth Cliff Show of all things motoring. So that wraps the show up, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Let's do it again on Monday.
Yes.
Let me just check my schedule. What time?
Any time around 6.
Okay, around 6.
Yeah. Anywhere between 6 and 9. Come in when you can.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Let me do that. I think 1 minute to 9 works best for me. Well, thank you guys so much. We will have a great weekend, and we will chat some more on Monday morning. Gareth will be back on Wednesday, but nonetheless, Ben, Leanne, and myself will be keeping you covered with the show and all of those great things.
Nice.
Until Monday, this has been the Gareth Cliff Show.
This is Cliff Central.com.